Okay, welcome back, everybody, to our learning at Share. Here we are in the month of Kislev, Baruch Hashem. Last week we said we're going into Kislev, now we're in Kislev. We are learning L'Ilui Nishmas and L'Zecha Nishmas, Miriam Fran, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzchak, Allah HaShalom, Rosh HaMishnah and Aliyah, and the continuous Aliyah in the merit of our Torah. So welcome back, everybody. We're on page 80 of the second Sefer. Please open up. Page 80 of the second Sefer. If I ever come up to the Yom Tov of Chanukah, the Yom Tov of light, when there's a lot of darkness, when we need the light, when there's so much darkness. Page 80. Is everyone with me? Sort of. We're getting there. Just go. How do we accomplish this? We'll just start from the beginning of the page because I don't even remember exactly where we are. I think in the second paragraph. Here too, we'll start with an example from the material world. If an object is 1,000 kilometers away, so you obviously can't see it. If it's close by, you can. My son was just doing his homework yesterday. He wanted to know the difference between nearsighted and farsighted. So if something's far away, you can't see it. You don't have far sight. If it's close by, you can. You're nearsighted. Hence, the inability to see an object stems from the distance between the person and the object. When you come close, you're able to see it. In the contrast, the reason we don't see Hashem, it's not that he's in some faraway place, but he can't be seen. You know, it's interesting. I said over on a Sunday morning shir, just this past Sunday morning, the Kislev shir. So Shimshon Pinchas speaks about being in the dark and not being able to see an object. And it's not that you can't. Let's say he says you walk into a base medrash when it's pitch black. If you listened online, then you heard me say it already. Let's say you walk into a base medrash and it's pitch black and you're looking for a certain sefer and there's no lights, there's no electricity, there's no windows, it's totally dark. Does it mean the sefer is not on the shelf or does it mean you just can't see it? It's still there, it exists. So that's concrete proof and reality for someone who needs logical proof and reality that just because something cannot be seen. In this case, we're talking about the Ribbono Shel Olam. Just because something can't be seen does not mean it doesn't exist. So if somebody wants a proof of that in the physical world, that's a proof. Close your eyes, make it absolute pitch black. You can't see shadows. Does that mean the table's not in the room? Sorry. Does that mean the table's not in the room when you can't see the table? You can't see the table. The defect's on you because you're in the dark, not that the table's not there. So if somebody can't see or perceive or sense Ribbono Shel Olam, does that mean the Ribbono Shel Olam Chalila is not present or that you can't see? You know, my son, that's so bad. They're almost 12, Kanai Nahar. He told me yesterday he was in the middle of collecting some. His rabbi gives out these old coins, old. I mean, I don't know, 1950s, 1940s. And he came home yesterday, he told me he lost his coins on the bus. Such a rachmanis. I felt so bad for him. So today I said maybe the bus driver has them. You know, his chin was quivering a little. He was very upset. So then when he came home, I said, did you find your coins? He says, no. He says, almost crying. He says, Hashem doesn't want me to have them. And such a tumusik. While he was upset, he himself said, Hashem doesn't want me to have them. So we can acquire. We have to be inspired for higher madrigas of Emunah. Just because I don't see the Ribbono Shel Olam, or just because it's dark in my life, or just because it's dark as a people in the month of Kislev, where we're striving to find it, it means something doesn't exist, or it means I can't see. It's absolute concrete proof. So if I cannot see Hashem, how can I live with the feeling that he's there? So we just quoted from Shimshon Pinchas, who helps us understand that just because you can't see something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I've never been there. I don't want to go there. I can't voluntarily take away any other sense. But has anybody been to the Blind Museum in Israel? What did he say? I didn't hear.
I didn't go in. I took my children.
Outside. Oh, you stood outside. It's very unsettling, no?
Yes.
It's pitch. They make you pitch back?
Yes.
So I can't go because I'm not voluntarily taking away another sense. I mean my sight. I rely on my sight. It would be very, very, even more disturbing for me. But it doesn't mean, I heard they like make you look like you're going to a grocery store. It's a museum. I've never been there. But they immerse you in an experience where it's pitch black, and then they make you go shopping in a grocery. Yes, is that right, sir?
Wow.
What else?
Are you moving from room to room and from things, and there are various obstacles or things, and not obstacles to mean to hurt you, but you're supposed to be able to feel your way around.
And there's no light filtering in. And there's also, no the guides themselves are visually impaired. Is that correct?
Right.
So imagine what this is. So it doesn't. What did
you
want to say?
They have you like crossing a street. They have you like eating a few things in like a sample restaurant. You're eating like a version of Bamba.
There's too many people once. Like, they have one here?
No. They have you do different things. Like crossing a street, eating different foods when you can't see.
It's very jarring. So that's what it's kaviyachot to be spiritually blind. So imagine how frightening that is. We don't think of that in the spiritual realm, but it so unsettles us in the physical realm. If we can't see something, we feel such a jarring sense of being so unsettled because we can't see. In the spiritual realm, sometimes we are in the dark, but how come we don't feel that sense of jarringness? I don't know if that's a word, but how come we don't feel a sense of shock, of being so unsettled just because we can't see? It's food for thought. It's food for thought. We have to open our eyes so that we can see. It doesn't mean it's not in front of us. It doesn't mean the Ribbono Shel Olam is not there. Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh anochi lo yadati. How is it possible, says Yaakov Avinu? Behold, I'm quoting from this week's parasha, after his famous dream with the ladder, he says, Achein, is it possible? Hashem is in this very place, and I did not know. I'm in the backwater of Luz and the rest station and the New York State Thruway, some place running into Gaulis, and I have this majestic vision of the Almighty over me. Here is Hashem. Everywhere is Hashem. Anochi lo yadati. Sometimes it comes to the point where the feeling is that I don't know. And a person, questions or comments?
I think that something came to mind. A very good friend of mine lost her husband very suddenly about 10 years ago, and one of her children he really lost a lot of faith in Hashem. And so I think for him, he was resolute and he was committed. Well, he's not there, because... So I think that when you say, when you're resolute like that, that you're saying, oh no, I don't see, he's not there. I think that's similar to saying, I can't see.
Right, so for a person in such a difficult nisayon, Rechmana Litzlan, though, they knew the Matzias is at that time in his life when he feels he's in a time of Hester Panim and the face of God is concealed, he really can see the Ribbono Shel Olam. So he's in a very difficult nisayon, we should never know. Sometimes it does affect a person's faith, but again, we have to be sure that we are on the side where we're always perceiving, able to perceive the Ribbono Shel Olam in our lives. It's a struggle. Here we go. When a person is already pure and Hashem is revealed in his heart. You with me, ladies? Halfway through page 80. I feel like you're all like, we're here, and then you're all the way over there. Why? Because you have your makomos kavua, your set places, even if the other people aren't here. Okay, fine. And a person is already pure, and Hashem is revealed in his heart. He will no longer entertain such questions. But until one reaches this state, it's a matter of faith. We trust Chazal. We know Hashem. We know He is present wherever we are. Because we trust Chazal, but we can't see Him, but we have faith. However, it's not enough to trust Chazal to know that Hashem is there. If someone asks you, are you with Hashem? You should be able to say all the time, I am with Hashem. Ein zeh ki im beis Elokim v'zeh shar shamayim. This is none other than the house of Hashem, and this is the gateway to heaven. Where is the gateway to heaven? Wherever you are. On the level of Drash, Yaakov, and Har Maria, in the words of Rav Shmuel Golden, it's a geographic calisthenics to make Yaakov in Har Maria. The land was folded over, he went back, Lamaisa, he's in the south, he's in Luz, he's like on the border of Eretz Yisrael, and Galus, that's why the angels of Eretz Yisrael are going up, and the angels of Chutz Arts are coming down to be Malavim, to accompany him to Galus. So on the level of Pshad, he's nowhere, he's in some backwater of Luz. That's the realization. What's his greatest realization from the dream? I just thought of something. I didn't think of this before. He doesn't wake up and say, Baruch Hashem, Hashem is going to give me this land. And he doesn't wake up and say, wow, I'm going to have children who faratz da yama v'kem at tzofon v'negba. We're going to burst forth in all four directions. And he doesn't wake up and say, what does he wake up and he says? Hashem is here. And I didn't know. Anywhere where I am, that's where Hashem is. Anywhere. When Hashem comes to Moshe Rabbeinu at the snare, at the burning bush, and first he says, take off your shoes, because he says, the land upon which you are standing, it's holy land. Where is he? In Midian, and in the backwaters of Egypt. It's holy land? It's Egypt. Why is it holy? Why is it holy? Because you're having a rendezvous with God. That's where Hashem is. That's when it's holy. Where is Hashem? Everywhere. If I can't see him, it means he's not there. If I come into a room and spit back, if I go to the blind museum, I can't see God, it means God, it's not in my life. I can't see, because I'm in the dark. So spiritually, we lamaisa have the same feeling. Sometimes a person is in the dark spiritually, so I can't perceive God. But every place is holy. Admas Kodeshu, it's holy ground. It could be Midian, it could be Luz. You know, when we went to the Bronx Zoo, Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and when we came out of the zoo, and it was around Shkia time, and there was a minyan, Amos Al Chassidim, I think my husband and my sons were the only ones who were not Chassidim in the group, and they were davening Mincha. So where is Hashem at that moment? We brought him down. The first time people bring down the Shechina, in the parking lot of the Brown Zoo, Amos Kodeshu. So Amna Alacha Me'ava Glacha, take off your shoes, because here is God. Why are you smiling?
Because my girlfriend was there that same day with her grandchildren, and she sent me a picture of that on WhatsApp.
That's so cute. Could you see my men?
You know what? I don't think I could, because it was kind of at a distance, and backs were turned, so I didn't. I'm
sure
think
they
I did.
Weren't the only men.
Yeah, I'm sure there were a few men.
I think they were in the parking lot at that time. They were. It was very, very empty that day. It was very overcast.
In the parking lot.
Yeah.
It
was pretty empty. That's very cute, but what did I want to say? Oh, it also shows you we have to be cognizant that our actions are always being watched by others, unbeknownst to us. That's a very strong lesson from what Nancy just interjected, that what we do impacts and influences other people, even when we don't know. Never mind bring the Ribbon Sha'olam down, not never mind, but having the relationship with him, and now it's Admas Kodesh, because you're standing on the asphalt of Bronx, but that's Admas Kodesh. But even more than that, look at the unknown impact and influence you could have on somebody else. Wow. Okay. However, we mentioned above, there are two kinds of faith. There is the knowledge of the intellect. That is the one we trust Chazal, so we know Hashem is present. And then there is a muna of the heart. And a person has to have both. You have to have a munas chachamim. You have to believe in the sages, and you have to believe what Chazal, the rabbis, tell us, and we have to know that that's Amos. But you also have to have a muna of your own heart. It's the ability to sense. This is an absolute fact. My son, his chin is quivering, and he says, Hashem doesn't want me to have. And those coins were important to him, and he was so happy to have the coins. You have to have the absolute fact in your heart, just as one knows an object exists. And here, he says, because he feels it. So just like I know this water ball exists because I feel it, because I see it, because I know it's here, so too, that's how you have to know that the Ribbono Shel Olam exists. So it brought to mind Chazal, what they say in Pirkei Avos. When the Mechaber writes, when the author writes, just as you know an object exists because you feel it. When you feel something, I feel this book, it's in my hand. I feel it because I'm holding it. I feel this because I'm holding it. So it brought to my mind Mishnah, Perek Dalet, chapter 4 in Pirkei Avos, Mishnah Yud Tes. Mishnah 19. Rabbi Yanai Omer, Rabbi Yanai says, listen to the Mishnah. Ein v'yadenu lo mishalvas harishaim v'af lo miyisurei hatzadikim. What's Rabbi Yanai saying? I'm going to translate, but what's Rabbi Yanai saying? I'm asking you. What's Rabbi Yanai saying?
We can understand Zadik
Ra'al. Okay. Bekitzer, that's exactly what Rabbi Yanai is saying. Bekitzer, Rabbi Yanai is saying, we can't understand Zadik Ra'al. But look at the, I'm going to translate it for you. Okay, so should I tell you how it's translated here? We cannot understand neither the tranquility of the wicked, that's tzaddik v'tovlo, nor the suffering of the... I said it wrong, halavai. We can understand rasha v'tovlo, tranquility of the wicked, or the suffering of the righteous, tzaddik v'ralo. So it's exactly what Joanna said. Pashut, that's how. But listen to the lashon. Again, please listen to me. Ein biyadenu. Lo mishal vasarisha and va'af lo misur etzadigam. What is Rabbi Yanai saying? Ein biyadenu. It's not in our hand. Why does he use that lashon? It's not in our hand, the tranquility of the wicked, and also not the suffering of the righteous. Why do you think the Mishnah set uses that lashon? Why can't you just say, we don't understand? We don't understand tzaddik v'ra'lo, the righteous, and it's bad for him. Why? When something is in your hand, you can fully grasp it. You know absolutely that it's there. You own that concept, for this, so to speak. I know that this water bottle absolutely exists. You didn't tell me it exists and I don't see it. I don't believe you that it exists. You know, you could tell me you have a water bottle in your kitchen. I don't have reason to not believe you, but Lamaisa, I don't know that it's there or it's not there. If something is in your hand, you own it. You grasp it. You feel it. I know this water bottle exists because I'm touching it. Ein biyadenu. Don't think you can grasp onto the concept of shalvas harasha'im, tranquility for the wicked, and miyasure hatzadikim, chastisement, pain, Yisurim, how do you translate it? Suffering. Suffering of the righteous. So if something is in your hand, it means it's very real to you. And if something's not in your hand, then what does it mean? It's not real to you. You know, it's so interesting. They say with preemies, which I went through this, they say with preemies that one of the most important things, well, there are many important things for premature babies, but one of the most important things, what am I going to say? We're talking about that they should like actually lay on the human, on the mother, skin to skin contact is one of the most important things. Again, I'm saying that. You could say that everything is the most important from the preemie. The doctors are the most important. The IV is the most important. The mother's milk. Marbu Masach Hashem, did you know that mother's milk of premature babies is different than mother's milk of full-term babies? It's higher in fat content because they need more fat than full-term. Mm. It's unbelievable. Marbu Masach Hashem. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. So everything is the most important for these babies. But one of the most important things for these babies is skin-to-skin contact. That the mother should put the child directly on her skin, on her chest. Because when you feel something, it's so real. Just as one knows an object exists because he feels it. Contrast to that. Compare that to tzaddik viralo. A righteous person, it's bad for him. A righteous person suffers. Rasha v'tovlo, a wicked person prospers. Ein b'yadenu. The Mishnah doesn't say you can't understand it. Listen to the lashon of the Mishnah, the words of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says it's not in your hand. What does that mean? You don't own it. You have no concept of it. You can't grasp such an idea that's not in your hand. So I just wanted to quote a few comments of Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau on this Mishnah. Does anyone have any questions or comments? You with me? So exactly what you said, Joanna. Rabbi Lau says many commentators understand this Mishnah to be addressing the perennial topic, why the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, who said, Harini nas darkacha, let me know your ways. The Gemara explains in Masachas Brachos, he was asking to understand the logic behind reward and punishment. And interestingly, the sages describe Moshe explicitly asking this question, Masechus Menachos, when he was shown a prophetic vision of Rabbi Akiva being martyred, Al Kiddush Hashem, Rabbi Akiva was killed, they scraped his flesh with metal combs, he was saying, Shema, Moshe protested. Moshe himself said, Zu Torah v'zu schara, quoting from Masechus Menachos, Chavtes, this is Torah, and this is its reward. Moshe himself said this, and what is Hashem's answer? Kilo yir'ah, la'ah! Kilo yir eni ha adam v'chai. Part of God is always concealed from us. Man cannot see absolutely God and live. One second. Even those of great faith have found it hard to reconcile their beliefs with the events thrust before their eyes. And he quotes David HaMelech from Tehillim, from Sefer Tehillim, and it's something that we have struggled with for so long. But the Mishnah concludes and says, Ein b'yadenu. There is no answer. You can't hold it. You don't know why. At any rate, says Rabbeinu Yonah, when we approach this question of Tzadik Viralo and Rasha Vitovlo, we must do so with the implicit presumption that Hashem rules with truth, justice, and fairness. Just because I can't understand does not mean it's not true, just, and fair. It means that I can't understand. Just like if you're in the room and you think that the Sfarim don't exist, that's ludicrous. They didn't fly off the shelf. You don't understand. So too, we can't understand. It is clear to me the world is ruled with justice. I may fail to understand, but that failure stems from my limitation. Even when it is not apparent to the eye, Hashem is righteous. So interesting. It's very interesting. I never thought this. But perhaps you could say, would you want to understand all of Hashem's ways? Which you never can. But I'm just putting it out there to tell you what Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Kotzk used to say. Quote, I cannot worship a supernal being, all of whose ways are clear to me, all of whose thoughts are apparent to me, all of whose decisions I understand. What is he saying? Then it wouldn't be God. Then it wouldn't be Hashem. If you're an equal, if you could understand everything, then it's not the supreme ruler, the supreme being. We are unfit to grasp the depth of God's providence, but we can attempt to deal with these matters. Even if we can't understand, we have to deal with these matters. And then he says, Rabbi Lau writes, I personally have met Torah giants, he says, such as the Chazon Ish, such as the Belzer Rebbe, many others, he says, I have met them who experienced poverty, exile, trials, and tribulations, yet no one's happiness could compare to that of these men who experienced a true delight in God. What's the absolute source of simcha, the absolute source of contentment, the absolute source of menuchas and nefesh? The amunah and the ribon shalom, being able to see, to perceive, to know that he is absolutely there. Quote, I personally met giants of Torah, such as the Chazon Ish, the Belzer Rebbe, and many others who experienced poverty, exile, all manners of trials and tribulations. No one's happiness could compare to that of these men who experienced a true delight in God. It's a very high madriga. It's a very, very high madriga, but it's something to keep in mind. And just because at times we may not be able to see the Ribono Shel Olam, it helps us also understand a little bit more the concept of Hester upon him. Just because he's hidden and I can't see him does not mean, Chas v'Shalom, he does not exist. Okay, going back to the page 80, right towards the bottom. If you know that there is a God who has no body or corporeal concepts, corporeal is human, right? Yes? Is that like, so Targum Onkus, interestingly, the commentator on the Chumash in Aramaic, which parallels the Pesukim, does not assign, are you looking up corporeal? Does not assign, thank you, anthropomorphic qualities to Hashem. It's very interesting. It says Hashem came down, so Targum Onkus says Hashem revealed himself. He does not assign anthropomorphic qualities to the Ribono Shel Olam, even though the Torah talks in terms of Hashem, human terms, right? They heard the voice of Hashem walking in the garden. Did you look that up? It's what we thought.
It's also like not having a body, no physicality, really.
No physicality. So even though the Torah assigns physical features to the Ribono Shel Olam, Vayishmas call Hashem Elokim Mishalech Began, is God walking in the garden? The Torah assigns, but Targum Onkelos will never interpret or explain Hashem in anthropomorphic terms. He always interprets Hashem revealed himself, so to speak, never in anthropomorphic qualities, because Hashem does not have a body. He is no beginning, he is no end, and so on and so forth. It should be clear that Hashem must be present wherever you are. I want to comment on something. It's actually Bechira, here we go again, and some of our Bechira V'yadiyah people aren't here, but I just want to talk about Hashem who has no beginning and end. I hope I'm going to say it properly. You know, we've been talking a lot over the past years of how do I have free will if God knows everything that's going to happen, right? For those of you who remember, yeah. If you weren't here and you don't remember, it's come up numerous times. It's a very hard concept. So someone shared a thought with me. She heard Rabbi Foreman this week. Rabbi Foreman spoke on it. So I'm just going to share with you what he said is food for thought. We are time-bound people. In fact, our first national mitzvah was to be time-bound. The first mitzvah we got is Rosh Chodesh. It means we're time-bound people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who has no beginning and no end, from the beginning of time to the end of time, his name indicates Haya Hove V'Yihi. He is in the present, he was in the past, he will be in the future. He's not bound by time. So at every moment, he's past, present, and future. He knows the end because he's not time-bound. We only have Bechira because we are confined by time, so to speak. So in the present, I have a choice. But the Ribono Shel Olam, who knows the end, is not time-bound. So therefore, it's not a contradiction. What do you think? I have to think about it. Say something. Does it help a little? Yes, no,
it's very
sense.
It's very heavy.
It's very heavy. Okay, you don't have to comment if you want to. I'm just putting out there as added food for thought. It's an interesting concept. We have Bechira because we are bound by time, so we don't know the end. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is beyond time, as his name indicates, Yod, then Hey, then Vav, then Hey. Haya, Hoveh, Vihiya, was, is, will be, knows the end of the story. Because he's still the end time. I don't think it's going to help us absolutely understand, but it adds an added element. Because he has no beginning and he has no end. Therefore, Hashem is present wherever you are. But the question is, how do we awaken the soul to the simple awareness that Hashem is present? So I actually want to quote this. I'm sorry Malachi's not here, but whoever sees her, please tell her. She gave this to me a couple of weeks ago. So I have a Karsa Tov. And actually it was in memory of her mother, Allah HaShem, given out of the Yertzei Tzu'uda. So her neshama should have an aliyah. So I'm going to quote from it. I'm quoting from Living Amunah, 3. Does anyone have it? Rabbi David Ashir. Okay. So he brings down a very interesting story. We're really talking about recognizing the Ribono Shel Olam and being with Hashem and knowing even more that he's with us. I think that's a better way of saying it. No, Hashem is with me all the time. And if I can't see him, it's my failing. I have to strive to work very hard to see Hashem in my life. So he quotes a story of Shalom Shwadron, the Maggid of Jerusalem, told the story of a very wealthy man whose son was deviating from the path of Torah. The boy knew how much his father wanted him to be observant. He pretended to be observant so that his father would give him money that he wanted. When he was 18, he told his father he wanted to go away to school. The father tried to dissuade him. The boy was adamant. The father reluctantly agreed, and he said to his son, okay, you can go on one condition. Make sure you put on your tefillin every day. So you stay connected to Hashem. You know, it's interesting, biyadeinu. You wrap the tefillin davka around your fingers and your hands. Specifically, you have to feel. You have to be in contact with the mitzvah. The boy agreed. 1 month later, the boy sent a letter to his father. I ran out of the money that you gave me. When I came, more money. The father said, pray to Hashem. He'll surely give you what you need. The boy was angry at his father's answer. He waited a few days. The money didn't show up. He wrote back and asked for more money. I prayed to Hashem. He didn't help. Please send me more money. The father sent another letter. The father said, strengthen yourself. Pray to Hashem. He will help you. The boy could not continue without money, so he had to return home. The first thing he told his father, the boy was very upset. Dad, don't you care about me? You sent me away. We made a deal. Why didn't you send me more money? Keep in mind, it's a very wealthy family. The father said, I told you how to get more money. All you had to do was pray. The boy said, I did, but it didn't work. The father unpacked the boy's tefillin bag and opened it up. And the boy was shocked because inside there was wads of money folded up. The boy felt such shame and remorse. Rav Shlomo Shwadron told the story over and accepted upon himself to really start praying. So sometimes the matter is so obvious. It's so in front of our eyes. All we have to do is open ourselves up. All you have to do is open the tefillin bag. All we have to do is open up ourselves. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, make some room. Let Hashem in. Rabbi Shem Shem Bigel said, the sad reality is people don't have time for Hashem. We think, Rachman son, he's absent. Why do we think he's absent? Because I'm not tuned in. I'm not plugged in. I'm not wrapped up. It's not in my hands. But he's there. You want to say something?
You know, with the opening up, the concept of opening up, I think sometimes the opposite has to be done, where you're taking one tactic or traveling down one road and it is not working. It's just not working. So you have to shut that one down. Just shut that one down and then go in another direction. Maybe shut it down, walk away from the situation, and then come back and say, well, that didn't work. I'm going in another direction.
So what are you saying?
Well, I'm saying that sometimes you have to, I guess, maybe close off a channel, one channel, and then open up another one.
Okay.
For it to work.
You have to know what to close off and what to open, and you have to be sure that what you're closing, what you're opening is the right way. It's the right path. And he just comments, I'm just going to finish with his comment, every mitzvah has real beauty inside of it, including, I'm going to add to this since we're specifically talking about Emunah, including the mitzvah of Emunah. It's a mitzvah. Anoch Hashem Elokecha, Arim Hashem your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt. It's a mitzvah of Emunah. Every mitzvah has real beauty inside of it. We just have to open it up to experience. You know, we've spoken about it. I mean, a couple of years ago we spoke about it. But David HaMelech says, King David says in Tehillim, Ta'amu uru'u ki tov Hashem. Ta'amu is the same. It's interesting. It's with your physical sense. Ein biyadeinu. Something has to be in your hand to grasp it. Ta'amu means taste and see that Hashem is good. You have to taste it. You have to experience it to know that it's very, very positive, that it's beautiful, that you want it, that if you open it up, it's going to bring you boundless blessings. Of course, it'll bring you, in this boy's case, it would have brought him the reward of hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, but in the spiritual realm. How much will it bring us in the spiritual realm? If we practice Yahadus the way it's supposed to be practiced, we will enjoy, he comments, this world, says Rabbi Asher, and the next. And that's one of the explanations, by the way, brought down by Rabbi Lau for Tzadik Viralo, the righteous suffer. One of the explanations in the commentators is that Hashem gives the wicked their reward in this world and their suffering in the eternal world, while the righteous have their reward in the next world. Therefore, whatever they are chaya for, whatever they are obligated to pay back for, whatever sins they get in this world, that doesn't necessarily help when a person's going through a very difficult nisayon, and it's not wise to go over to someone and say to them, you're getting your payback now, you're going to have olam haba. Don't say that. Al tanachamei b'sham meso muta lefanav. When someone's going through a hard time, don't go and say, it's all for the best, gamzo tova. Better not say anything, but it's for us to know the emes and to try and live like this. And how do we awaken the soul to the simple awareness that Hashem is present? That means you just got to open up the bag. Just unzip yourself. Just turn off the lights. And isn't that the Yom Tov of Chanukah? I said turn off the lights. What did I mean to say?
Turn on the lights.
And isn't that the Yom Tov of Chanukah? You think it's an accident that the Yom Tov of Chanukah is when it's so dark and the days are so short? You know, so one of the things this girl said, I don't know her name, I'm sorry. Motzei Shabbos, there was a show, they had a kumzus for the woman. A woman from Bergenfield who plays music and sings. It was very nice. It was just for the women. It was very nice. So she spoke a little in between. She gave a couple of nice divrei Torah in between. So she says, the woman out loud, she says, she opens her eyes Friday morning. When she opens her eyes, she thinks, the Shabbos. That's how you feel in these short days. Right? You feel like it's 9 o'clock in the morning. It's going to be Shabbos in 5 minutes. We have to open ourselves up to see the light when the days are so short and the night is so long and it's so dark. It's so dark, ladies, in the spiritual realm also. And it's so dark for Knesset Yisrael. So many people we know are in difficult situations. Knesset Yisrael as a whole tends to always be in one difficult situation or another. And Chanukah brings us the ability, the gift, open your eyes, allow the light to illuminate your life, allow the light to illuminate your soul. You can see what's right in front of you with Chanukah. But you can't see the whole year because you're in the dark. You could see it right now. We have to allow ourselves to see it. That's why we light 8 lights. 7 is Teva. 7 is nature. We don't stop at 7. We'd stop. We go. L'malam in a Teva. We always wait. We always believe. We know the Yeshua personally and nationally is coming. Questions or comments? No? Bye. Page 81. Awakening the soul through the power of speech. As we mentioned before, avoda must be always accompanied with the power of speech. Actually, I think that's the beginning of this. No, that was the previous, I don't remember. Must we come to the power of speech. Here too, we must use this faculty. So in other words, you need to sit and you need to talk to yourself and you need to tell yourself. David HaMelech says, in Tehillim, Kuf Tes Zayin, Ha'amanti Ki Adaber. And Hani Machas quotes this passage. Ha'amanti means I have emunah Ki Adaber because I spoke about it. And the Hani Machas biography, she speaks about speaking about emunah to increase your emunah. That speaking about topics, even if it's beyond your present level, will help enhance your emunah. Ha'amanti, I have emunah Ki Adaber because I spoke about it. So it's very interesting. We have to use the faculty of speech to awaken emunah within ourselves. When Leah has Yehuda in this week's parasha, her fourth son. What does she say? The end of Perichov Tess. Come on, Leah. It's very famous. What does Leah say? What? So what does she say?
Isn't this
time.
From today?
Yeah. What did you say?
I said, isn't this what you said?
Yes. Now? I'm quoting it. If you read my Dvar Torah, then you know it already. It's beautiful, right? No, I quoted the Rav. I don't mean that my Dvar Torah is beautiful. I mean that the piece of way of salvation interpret. Did anyone read it besides for me and Esther? Okay, so then it's new for everybody else. And I don't care to learn the same thing again. Rav Salvechik interprets Hapam Odes Hashem. Okay, let me tell you the background. Leah has 4 children, and when she has 7 children. But when she has her 4th son, she has Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and then she has Yehuda. And she is Yehuda, she realizes, says Rashi, she got more than her share. She saw in Ruach HaKodesh, through divine inspiration, that there are 4 wives, 12 tribes, each wife should get 3 boys. Well, she has her 4th, and what does she say? I got more than my share. Natalti yoter michalki, says Rashi. I got more than my share. Hapam odes Hashem. Therefore, I will say thank you, Hashem. Of Salvechik is an entirely different interpretation into this pshat. Rav Salvechik says as follows. I'm sorry, I think it's Parak Chaf Tes Pasuk Lamed Hey. Rav Salvechik says something entirely different. The concept of thanksgiving, no pun is intended for the holiday, that's tomorrow. The concept of thanksgiving involves expressing, listen, it's very important. The concept of thanksgiving involves expressing gratitude to God for what has been attained while accepting that it is impossible to acquire everything which one desires. So Avichik is saying it's not just Pasha, thank you. It's the acknowledgement that I can't have everything I want, and I won't get everything I think I need. Nevertheless, I will thank Hashem. How do we see that? Because what do the names of her first three sons indicate? The names of her first three sons all have to do with her relationship with who?
Yaakov.
Her husband, Yaakov. Yes, thank you. They all have to do with her relationship with her husband, Yaakov. Each name of the first three sons expresses a longing for her husband because she is Vayarshem Kisnu Aleya, however you want to translate it. God sees that she's not so loved. Kisnu Aleya, Leinaleya Rakos. Yaakov says, why did you trick me? Lamarumi Sani, how did I marry up with this woman? Reuven, Ki Ra'a Hashem Ve'ani, God saw my affliction. Maybe now my husband will love me. Wow, I had his Bechor. He has a child to carry on, Beis Avram. My husband will love me. That's not what happens. So then she has a second son. She herself says, Ki Shama Hashem Ki Snua Anochi. God heard that I was, it's translated as unloved. Okay, Snua Anochi. And he gave me this one, and she called him Shimon. Shama Hashem. She does, interesting, she doesn't call him after the word Snua, which would be very negative. Shimon is after Shama Hashem. God heard me. But what did he hear? She says, I made it. Third son, Levi. Ata hapam yilava ishi elai. My husband will come to accompany me because I gave him three sons. I filled my quota of tribes. She called him Levi. But the love never happens the way she imagines or longs for. And nevertheless, when she has her fourth child, note, it's a totally different name on a totally different track. It now has nothing more to do with her relationship with who? Yaakov. It now has to do with her relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ata hapam. No, that's Levi. Hapam. Oda es Hashem. I will thank Hashem. And therefore she calls me to explain Zerav Salavechit. The concept of thanksgiving involves expressing gratitude for what has been attained while accepting that it is impossible to acquire everything one desires. Who can relate to this? Who could say I'm exempt from this? Who could say this isn't me and my life? Who says they have everything they desire? And yet you wake up in the morning and you say, Ma'oda ani. The first word out of your mouth in the morning is not I am thankful. It's thankful am I. Translate Ma'oda ani. It's not I. The anochi, the ani doesn't come first. It's Ma'oda. So someone at the Nihilist raised his hand. He said, excuse me, not everyone here celebrates Thanksgiving. So I said, that's okay if you don't celebrate Thanksgiving. I said, but we should have Thanksgiving every day. I said, every day when you wake up and you open your eyes, it's a day of Thanksgiving. You start the day with Ma'oda ani. Only after her fourth son was born did Leah finally resign herself to the truth of her relationship with Yaakov. She was resigned. She accepted. No more does the son's name represent a longing for Yaakov. Even though I married him with deceit. He goes to love and he says, what are you doing? I worked for 7 years. I met her by the well. I love her. I want to marry her. You gave me this one. It's the wrong wife. Even though I'm resigned to my fate. She is resigned to her tafkid. She accepts that she has a tafkid, albeit a difficult one, in the destiny of Knesset Yisrael. And for that she thanks Hashem. Who is that not relevant to? Every one of us have a tafkid, and we believe with Amunah Shalema, that's my tafkid, and I have to fulfill. Even if you don't have everything you strive to acquire. With Yehuda's birth, Leah finally relinquished the hope of ever being Yaakov's beloved. Yet she was grateful to God nonetheless. She had four children to love and to care for. And in fact, the Gemara goes so far as to tell us, Maseches Brachos, Zion, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai mentions, Leah is the first one to offer thanks to God. It's unbelievable. And what's not an accident, what do we call this a people? Yehudim. We're just used to being called Judaism, Judea. It's after who? Yehuda, Judah. We could be called Reuvenites, Shimonites, I don't know. After God, Asher, we're called Judah because in the essence of who we are. We understand what the Rav is adding here, the Ha'ara. It's not just that thank you for what you did for me. It's the acknowledgement that even though I feel I lack, I thank you, Hashem, nonetheless. It's so tremendously powerful. And Leah, says the Gemara, is the first to offer thanks for God. She is the first to assert, God must be praised for any blessing he bestows upon us. The name Yehuda later became associated with the Jewish people itself, because despite our suffering and despite the persecution, in other words, despite the nisyonos, lo biyadeinu av mishavas harishayim velgam lo va'af lo miyusurei tzadikim, despite the yusurei of the tzadikim, despite the lack of tranquility we face, we remain thankful to God, says Rav Soloveitchik. And that's who we are as a people. Ata pam ha'pam oda es Hashem. Why did I bring that up at all? Why did I bring that up dafka here on the top of page 81? Because the last thing we read is the avoda of Amunah must be accompanied with the power of speech. It's so interesting that Leah here verbalizes the emotions, and through the verbalization she comes to a higher level of hodah, of shavach, of praise, of gratitude to God. Through the verbalization, it's very important to verbalize. Here too we misuse this faculty. Let's just do Ramar paragraph. Yes, no?
Yes.
You should respond, Hashem is here, right next to me. Then ask yourself, can I see him? Obviously the answer is no. Do I believe it? And what's the answer to that? Yes, and I think we gave a very important mashal. Just because I can't see something doesn't mean it does not exist. Keep in mind the blind museum of Shem Shem Pinkus and the Beis Medrash. If I believe he is here with me, but I do not sense his presence, how can I say I am living in faith? Why don't I sense it? And the Torah really illustrates that with Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu himself says, God is even here and I didn't know. You don't sense Hashem with you because you're too focused on yourself. You see that line? It's geschmack. What a geschmack line. I don't have what I need. I'm too tired. I'm too busy. I wanted to get lettuce. I couldn't get into parking lot of Gourmet God. I. You know why you don't sense Hashem? Because you're too busy thinking about yourself.
Mm.
That is an unbelievable line. Rav Soloveitchik says, you know why atheism is not prohibited from the Torah? There are no atheists. Man either believes in God or man believes in himself. That's what the Rav says. A human being can make himself into a God. I'm in charge. I. You don't sense Hashem because you're focused on yourself. If you would stop thinking about yourself all the time, if you would open the tefillin bag, open yourself up, choose the right avenue, all of a sudden, what would you do? Naturally sense Hashem in your life. Remember the Kotzka, Anochi Omeid Ben Hashem Uveinechem Be'esahi, Devarim, I believe it's Perikei Pasuk Beis. I stood between you and God. It's a good time to end with this. And to remind ourselves of this word of the Kotzker, Moshe Rabbeinu is transmitting the Torah for Mishnah Torah. He's reviewing the Torah. It says, at the time of the transmission of the Torah, I stood between Hashem and you at that time. Says the Kotzker, what stands between us and God? The Anochi of man. Anochi Omeid, Ben Hashem Uveinechem. The I, in quotes, the I of a person, the ego, is what is an impediment to our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. What a brilliant line. You know you don't feel Hashem? Because I'm too busy thinking about myself. So, Be'ezras Hashem, we should be zocha to emulate our foremother Leah, Hapam, Oda, Es Hashem, Alken, Karshma, Yehuda, to live up to the tremendous kochos inherent within ourselves. That even if we feel we are lacking, even if we feel we are lacking, the Ribbono Shel Olam is right there. And for that, we give thanks. Thank you so much, ladies. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Any questions?
I have a question.
Sure.
It's like a tangent a little bit, but I'm just thinking about it now that we've heard about Leah. Is there anything about Leah going along with, you know, the whole charades? Like, what about Leah going in the place of...
Well, Rachel gave the simanim.
I know.
They were in on it. So I'll just tell you quickly what the Medrash says since you brought it up. You know, B'midash Adam Modei Ba Modu Dinosa, the way in which a man measures others, he will be measured. When Esav comes in to get the brachos, he starts screaming. I think that's from the Megillah, but it's a play on words also on Parshas Toldos. What happened here? So what does his father say to him? Ba'achicha b'mirma. He came in trickery and he took your blessings. One second. Ba'achicha b'mirma v'yikach b'chasecha. So Yitzchak says, I'm sorry, your brother came in trickery and deceit and he took your blessings. Fast forward to our parsha on the marriage. He wakes up in the morning, and lo and behold, who is it? Leia. And he goes to Lavan and he says, what did you do? Lamari Misani, why did you trick me? I worked for her for 7 years. One second, please. It's very cool insight. Just stay with me. Unless you absolutely have to leave, please stay with me. It's really amazing. Vahiba Boker was in the morning, Vahina Hilaya, she's Leia. And he says to Lavan, what did you do to me? What does Esav say when he comes home from the field? What happened to your father? Where are my blessings? I worked for 7 years for Rachel. V'lami rimi sani. Why did you trick me? Listen to these words. Ba achicha b'mirma v'yikach b'rchasecha. Your brother came with deceit and took your blessings. Ba achicha b'mirma. Yaakov comes b'mirma and steals the blessings. And what does he say to Lavan? Lami rimi sani. Well, isn't that the exact same word? He came with deceit. He was deceived. So the Medrash says, why did this happen to him? Because he deceived his father. He was deceived. Furthermore, then Lavan continues and he says, now listen to these words in a new light. Lo yaseikim b'mikomenu. In our place, Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks explains the Medrash as follows. In our place, we don't do this. Maybe in your place, latet hatzi'ira lefnei b'chira. Maybe in your place, the younger goes before the older, which is essentially what Yaakov, yes, he sold the b'chora. But Yaakov did. Therefore, in our place, we don't do this.
That's not my question.
Okay, I'm just bringing it up because it's cool inside.
Why Leah went along with it?
Because she cried and she cried and she cried and she cried. She didn't want to marry Esav. It was an opportunity to marry at Tzadik, so she wasn't a love wife. Look at her sacrifices and contribution for Knesset Yisrael. She was willing to sacrifice her entire personal, momentary happiness for the sake of Knesset Yisrael. She went along with it because she didn't want to marry Esav or Rasha. She had the best tribes. Reuven's the Bechor, Shimon and Levi, Achim, Atem, Yisachar and Zvulun with their beautiful partnership, and Yehuda's Malchus, Wadu, God, Naphtali, Dan, Asher, Gajabu. Binyamin's wiped out by the concubine, by Giva, and Yosef is very great, but Malchus goes to Yehuda. Leah did it for the sake of Knesset Yisrael, to the ultimate chesed.
I understand that, but isn't it also, why did Leah trick?
Why Leah? Did
Yaakov also feel that Leah tricked him?
Well, Rachel gave her the simanim. And Vayizkar Elokim es Rachel, Vayivtach es Rachma, the Perek Lamed Pasuk, Chaf Beis, or Lamed Aleph Chaf Beis, Hashem opened her womb and he remembered her. What did Hashem remember? Shemasra Simanel Achosa, that she gave her signs to her sister.
I think this is another example.
Lamed Aleph.
Trickery words for the good. And so, but when you have Rus, when you have all those where it's done, bin mirba, it's supposed to be something.
But she did it for the sake of the people.
She did it for the right
thing. He doesn't love her because she tricked him.
Exactly. Like you could understand why he didn't love her. Because he feels tricked by her.
No, he never loved her in the first place. One second. He didn't really love her. The Torah doesn't say that he loves her. It says, Vayav Yaakov es Rachel. He loves Rachel, even before the trickery. He didn't really want to marry Leah. But the Hashkacha wanted him to marry Leah. Look at her sacrifices. And in the end.
I understand her sacrifice. I do. I understand it from her perspective, but from Yaakov's perspective.
Yeah, but that's why the Medrash says he tricked his father. So he was tricked. That's exactly what the Medrash says. So ultimately, what we do to others is going to come back to us. There are consequences to your actions. Alai kilascha b'ni. His mother says, don't worry. Your curses that you will get for tricking your father will befall me. But at the end of his life, he says, Mesa alai Rachel. Rachel died upon me. Alai. My troubles were supposed to be on my mother. But I suffered with Esav, Lavan, and alai. Esav, Lavan, and Yosef. I had so many Yisurim. And now Rachel died on me. The Yisurim come upon him, not upon his mother, ultimately.
But at the end of the day, we really don't know because these people were great people. We can't understand.
Okay. But the Torah wants us to learn from them. Otherwise, we wouldn't have these narratives in the Torah. Rabbi Melech Biderman writes that every week, that really we can't speak about the Avos, but we need to speak about the Avos because we have to learn from them. What's the point of putting this in if Hashem doesn't want us to learn from them? Mm. Why is it here? So just tell me, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov established the Jewish people. Makes them as very great, worlds beyond. We can't understand, but we have to learn from them. Otherwise, why is it written? Okay, anything else?
I don't think your question is.
Have a wonderful Shabbos, ladies.